Okay, so we were just dividing up the questions because I don't know, this person's really trying to help her friend, but she's...
She's concerned about herself and possibly having a similar diagnosis.
Okay. So the friend has a plaque score of 25.
No, she herself has a plaque score of 25.
Oh, she's the one.
She's concerned because her friend was diagnosed with endothelial dysfunction.
We dealt with it.
What about? Yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
And the widowmaker artery.
Right. Okay.
That's a term that I really am disgusted with because it's a used car salesman type term that cardiologists use to promote intervention, usually angioplasty or coronary artery bypass grafting. The widowmaker is the left main coronary artery. Okay. Mm. It is the most important coronary artery. That's why it's the left main coronary artery. It goes to the left ventricle, the hardest working part of the heart. And so, but to use that term, widowmaker, is, you know, A, it's sexist because it's like...
It should be the widower maker
You could be
Cindy.
The widower. It could be. Let's, I mean...
God forbid, Cindy.
We're, you know, we're in the Me Too era here, you know. So, you know, let's make it at least non-sexist because it's women can die of this. But it also suggests that that merely the presence of some plaque or blockage is going to make you die, and there is some truth to extreme occlusion of that artery. There's not a lot of evidence that angioplasty in asymptomatic individuals, in other words, you don't have angina, you've not had a heart attack, you've not had any evidence of unstable angina or really reduced coronary artery blood flow, that intervention makes you live longer or even reduces subsequent cardiac events. So we're putting in a lot of stents unnecessarily because we scare people into thinking that they've got blockage and they better do something about it. You know, it kind of makes sense. If your toilet's not flushing very well, maybe you should get your toilet replaced because eventually your toilet will fail. But that's kind of a low-risk intervention, getting a stent or bypass and requiring medication for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
that's a kind of a higher-risk intervention, and it's got to pay off, and studies do not validate that.
Yeah.
So, by the way, a 25 score is a very low score. It means there's the beginning of plaque, and you should be undertaking preventive efforts. And if that were my patient, I'd say, well, let's work on all your risk factors, not just your cholesterol. Let's like work on diet, exercise, blood pressure control.
Lipoprotein little a, high sensitive C-reactive protein.
Homocysteine.
Homocysteine, triglycerides.
LDL fractionation, ApoA and B. There are other markers too.
There are other markers, which are actually more important than the cholesterol. You know, there are enough books out about...
There's even looking at your omega-6, omega-3 ratio.
Yes.
The ratio, that's
you don't want a pro-inflammatory ratio.
That's a highly predictive value.
You also want to look at your blood sugar and insulin, because insulin will
be a
promoter of inflammation, so will high blood sugar. That will cause the crack in the wall.
Okay. So, this is sort of a consistent message that we really try to reinforce here. Is don't just look at the cholesterol.
Don't just look at the cholesterol, please. Cindy, best of luck to you. Take good care of yourself as you are. All right. We've got an email.
There's no way you can become a widow.
There's no way. No, you can't. We have an email from Michelle. Hello, could you discuss...
Because you'll either be alive or you'll be dead. I mean, it's just... It's only logical.
It's only logical. Okay, Dr. Hoppen. All right. Michelle says, could you discuss that doctors are now saying that seniors 65 and older can now have a hemoglobin A1C of 7.1, which is considered normal? I thought it was 4 to 5.6. I guess when you hit 65, no one really cares about you.
Exactly.
Up until I was 65, I was told that my blood sugar had to be under 6. Then suddenly at 65, my 7.1 reading is okay.
You get
what's with that?
You get a senior discount.
You get you get a senior
it's like,
discount.
You know, it was
you get a 10%.
Exactly. Things get easier in some ways. You
know,
they let things slide a little bit. You know, it's like they give, you know.
You're older now, you can get away with it.
It's like, here, please take my seat. You know, it's like, Mm-hmm. What's the matter? Do I look so old that I need to see? Right. But it, okay, so there are a couple of things going on here.
Yeah.
One is a certain amount of resignation that doctors have, that patients, as they get older, their blood sugar control deteriorates. So that's just the way it is. People gain weight. Mm. Their pancreas doesn't function as well.
The blood sugar will naturally go up.
Yeah, we can't be so rigorous with people anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because, after all, what would we do about it?
Yeah.
We'd put people on medications. Well, okay, yeah, let's take a person who has a hemoglobin A1C of 7.1 and put them on one of the common diabetes medications. Studies show that that doesn't make them live longer, because here it's not a matter of, you know, getting an amputation because, you know, your blood sugar is 400. It's just borderline blood sugar.
Yeah.
So by, you know, and they've done the studies that show that medication does not extend longevity. I would maybe make the exception of metformin, which has been shown for other reasons maybe to extend longevity, not just about blood sugar.
Yeah.
But so the reason they now are more lenient is because they're afraid doctors are going to take this so literally that they're going to take anyone who has a very marginal blood sugar and put them on a medication, which A, would increase medical expenditures enormously. They're about cost savings.
Yeah.
And B, it would also jeopardize patients with a lot of side effects. These medications have side effects.
Yes.
So,
however, and can cause nutrient deficiencies as well. So.
But we take a different position.
Yeah.
We think that somebody comes in here as 65 or 72 or 81, that, you know, they should optimize their blood sugar. And they can.
And they can.
We're not resigned to it. And we have the time and the patience and the wherewithal to tell them how to do it.
Right.
Rather than just say, oh, don't worry about it. We'll fix it when it's 8, or 7.5 or something, you know.
Exactly. You know, I will have, and this is how stringent we are here, I have some 80-year-old clients in their 80s who are coming in and are concerned about a hemoglobin A1C of a 5.7 at age 82. You know what? I remind them,
we had a question about that.
Worry.
We had a question like that. It's very kind of cute, you know, somebody's, I'm 85 and then...
Am I in the pre-diabetic range?
Yeah.
Not really, because 20 years earlier, I'd say do the, but you're already doing everything right. You're not taking anything that might falsely elevate your blood sugar, blah, 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 blah. And by the way, when you had your blood drawn for that, were you suffering from a cold or infection?
Yeah.
Because that could also falsely raise your...
Any number of things. We did a whole rundown on what
can
falsely influence hemoglobin A1C. Even anemia can, low iron.
Anemia can do it, yeah.
So,
very interesting.
So
Michelle says, should I still try for under 6? I think I'll still try to get below 6.
Go for the gold. Go for it. Go for it.
Absolutely. Go for it,
we're not going to dissuade you from going for it.
And at the young age of 65, you want to keep it under 6. I absolutely agree. I would still keep it under 5.6.
And just remember, it affects your brain. It increases your risk for dementia. Mm-hmm. Dr. Perlmutter, when he does presentations on dementia, he shows that even within the normal range, up to hemoglobin A1C of 6.2, anywhere from 5.7 to 6.2, sometimes to 6.4, for each 0.1% increase of the hemoglobin A1C, you get about 10% increase in your risk of dementia.
Yeah.
So
that's significant.
Yeah.
10% increase. I don't want that.
Yeah. I would minimize that.
Oh, my goodness. Michelle, thank you for this very thoughtful question.
Good point at which to pause, because we allow our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you. So listen up. Here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to Layla with our questions. What's next?
We have from Camogello. Camogello.
That's a name?
Yes.
Oh, that's a place.
Nope. I'm going to presume it's a he. Camogello is asking, what causes ulcer and what can I do to fix it?
That seems like an African name.
Maybe. Yeah.
We have listeners all over the world.
We do. What pills can I take to stop ulcer?
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Well,
I'm imagining he's saying stomach ulcer or peptic ulcer.
Yep.
I can't imagine an ulcer on your leg.
No, I think it's probably stomach ulcer. So without that much information, we now know that it can be tied to infection.
Yeah.
And so getting rid of Helicobacter could be a way. We don't know what type of medical care is available in the country this person's writing from.
Yes.
So, you know, was it diagnosed based on endoscopy? Do we know for sure this person has an ulcer? Is this person on medication for the ulcer?
Mm-hmm.
Because let's have a hypothetical. Somebody comes in and says, I have an ulcer. What do I do? I want holistic backup for that. Well, I'd say, first of all, if you have an ulcer, it's okay to be on medication because you may need to be on medication for a while as kind of a chemical band-aid to allow the ulcer to begin to heal.
Yeah.
But you don't want to stay on that medication in perpetuity, as your doctor might say, well, you might as well stay on it forever because the ulcer might come back. We'd like to get you off that medication because of the side effects associated with these powerful acid blockers. So we would, in concert with that, I would send them over to you. And what would you tell them about an ulcer diet?
An ulcer diet, you want to reduce things that, A, are causing irritation. Number one, anything spicy, deep fat fried, anything like that. But taking something like, I could think of a couple of supplements, N-acetylglucosamine, NAG,
right,
and also mastic gum.
Mastic gum, which inhibits the Helicobacter.
Yeah, yeah.
Even cranberry inhibits Helicobacter.
Right.
But
right.
Our go-to is mastic gum. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And beyond that, a lot of people who don't have ulcer, have symptoms of ulcer, but are checked for Helicobacter pylori, are then given that triple antibiotic
Prevpac
treatment.
Powerful antibiotics.
Yeah. And then they come back with a new problem.
Which is SIBO.
Yeah. GERD.
GERD.
As well, terrible GERD
right.
and hoarseness. Mm-hmm. So there's a problem, actually, with the... I'm reminded of watching The Odd Couple and Oscar Madison always having a glass of milk before he ate that very spicy chili dog or whatever he was having in his...
And Felix gave the ulcers, and Oscar got the ulcers.
Oscar
was definitely an ulcer personality.
So it brings to mind that. But I do believe ulcers are mainly caused by this bacteria, or I can't imagine another source except by taking something caustic by accident.
Well, here's the thing that causes a very high percentage of ulcers in this country is NSAIDs.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Too many NSAIDs or aspirin in some cases.
That's right. That could cause a GI bleed, definitely. Right. Ulcer, NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs.
Enormous stress, torture.
Yeah.
You know. There's actually a famous...
Heavy alcohol.
And heavy alcohol,
yeah.
There's a famous paper by a doctor who was imprisoned in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And he had no medical supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And so these fellow prisoners were abused and tortured and tremendously stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like in the movie Midnight Express the very scary kind of dungeon-like experience.
Mm-hmm.
And... So he wrote a paper on how he cured the ulcers of his fellow prisoners by simply administering the one thing that he had in abundance, which was water. He had them just hydrate with a lot of water, and it had a healing effect on their ulcers.
Wow.
That was the only thing he had available. So that could be at least part of the equation.
That's fascinating. Ginger is also helpful.
Yeah.
In healing stomach ulcer.
Okay.
Especially from the chronic use of NSAIDs.
Oh, okay. Because it's anti-inflammatory.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anti-inflammatory. So it's good that way.
What about Endofen? We like it for heartburn.
Oh, I like it for, because it repairs the stomach lining. We normally give it for GERD gastritis, but I would give it for ulcer.
And lots of DGL.
Lots of DGL.
Aloe. Some of the same things we use for GERD, because they're both inflammations.
Right.
It's just that GERD
and
is
erosions,
a little...
Erosions. Whether it's esophageal or
GERD's a little
gastric.
Higher up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But some of the same things apply. So Endafin from Metagenics, aloe vera gel or juice,
DGL.
And DGL, lots and lots of deglycericinated licorice.
Right. And L-glutamine.
L-glutamine has a healing effect.
Which helps to restore the
lining.
The lining.
Yep.
The gastric lining. So this is something. Camagello, wow. So to stop ulcer, how do we keep it from starting, you know? How do you keep Helicobacter pylori out of your life? I don't know if you eat out a lot. Yeah, I mean, it's bacteria.
Here's the thing about it is that it's not 100% the cause of ulcers, because a very high percentage of people carry it and don't get ulcers.
Right. So
and especially in the third world. It's a commensal. Yeah,
it's a commensal. And how to keep from getting it? Don't chronically use NSAIDs. Don't chronically drink.
Right.
Don't chronically eat foods that are upsetting your stomach. Pay attention to that.
Yep.
So
overeating.
Overeating, yeah. Yeah.
Good.
So.
Does that exhaust our list?
That exhausts our list of questions.
Okay. Well, that's a very, very good session for today. Do we have any final parting words for 2019?
Oh, wishing you all happy holidays, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And of course, January will be the month where everybody jumps into a new gym subscription, and all the diet books are going to come out, and a determination will be made of which one is the best, and that will all be fun to talk about.
Right.
In the coming months.
Right, they're all queuing up like horses.
New Year's resolutions.
At the Kentucky Derby, and they're in the paddocks or in the starting gate.
Uh-huh.
Ready to be released when people suddenly discover rectitude as opposed to hedonism in January. And we'll be there for you in January to rate the best books and to advise you on the best strategies for taking control of your health. A little hard to do a health show.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to give up for the rest of the year. And you'll enjoy some of our best of broadcasts and podcasts. We wish you and your family a very happy and healthy holiday. A Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever you're celebrating.
And thank you for listening.
And also in the solitude of winter, some of those quiet days, if you get a little bored, we've got some great podcasts from 2018 that you can find at drhoffman.com. So listen away. You can binge listen.
There you go.
And we'll
That's
hope
a good
you
time for it. Yeah.
Just say, Alexa, play Dr. Hoffman.
There you go.
I don't know if Alexa knows us yet, but we got to try that out someplace.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thank you, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.